Okay, Ryan Cavanaugh, thanks so much for calling in. They heard your My Favorite Things, and that's on what album? There were questions in the chat room about where to find out. Leah was answering them, but not everybody's in there. So tell us where that version of My Favorite Things that I played came from.
Well, that was recorded earlier in 2012 for a Christmas compilation called An East Nashville Christmas that was released this past November. And other artists on there include Sam Bush, Kenny Vaughn, really great guitar player from Nashville, and a slew of other great musicians and bluegrass bands and people in East Nashville that aren't of the pop country status. This was sort of the counter to that, the Americana album, and it went out. It's for sale on iTunes. You can also look my name up on iTunes and find the one MP3 that I recorded. It was a duet with some of My Favorite Things with one of my really good jazz keyboardist friends named Tyson Rogers. And all proceeds go to charity for the homeless.
Oh, that's great. That is great. Now, of course, a lot of people will think of the tune My Favorite Things. You're right. It's kind of a Christmas. It's become a Christmas tune because of its use in a movie, I think, around that time. But when you and I were talking last week, you know, when I hear that tune in extended version, I think of the same guy you think of, John Coltrane.
Yeah, I think of John Coltrane, and I love John McLaughlin's version of that on his Coltrane tribute record.
Yeah.
And when I decided to do that for that record, I listened to all the Coltrane versions as well as the John McLaughlin version, and I listened to the Sound of Music, which was the movie that Rodgers and Hammerstein wrote that song for.
Right.
And I decided, you know, I listened to them and they're all slightly different, so I wrote my own arrangement of that, like a one-sheet, you know, treble clef arrangement with some different chords and the chorus in a different spot. And me and Tyson went in there, and that's the third or fourth take. There's no edits, and we just had a really good vibe in the studio.
Yeah.
Liked it a whole lot.
Well, when we were just starting to get into who is Ryan Cavanaugh and where he's from and what he's doing, that's a lot to cover, but that's when we lost our audio, at least the vocal portion of the show, and it clicked over to some. But we're back now, so let's pretend like you just called in. This is Ryan Cavanaugh talking on Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass. How are you, Ryan?
Good to be here. I'm just great.
Okay. Now, where we were interrupted is, tell the listeners out there, and it is worldwide, it goes everywhere, believe me. I get contacts from people all over the world. Tell them a little bit about your banjo playing, why you started playing, when you started playing. We were just talking about John Coltrane, so we know that you have some jazz chops thrown in there also, and John McLaughlin. But let's just go a little bit through it, and we'll take it apart as we go.
My father, I grew up with my father listening to a lot of Doc Watson and Earl Scruggs. Sure, he listened to just about everything, classical music and rock music, country music. My father's a Renaissance man in many ways, but it shows in everything he does and in the music that he listened to. All of that really inspired me. And he inherited a banjo for his banjo skills from a great uncle of mine that brought a Vega 5 string over from Ireland in the early 1900s.
Really?
And this uncle of mine flat picked the Vega 5 string in Irish dance bands, fiddle tunes like Devil's Dream and Gary Owen and stuff.
Wow.
So my father later learned a little bit of that and got into some bluegrass as an amateur picker, and I found his banjo when I was younger, and it didn't hurt my fingers like the guitar, so I decided to start playing the banjo that way. And shortly after, I moved to the mountains of North Carolina. I started playing when I was 10, and I moved to North Carolina when I was about 11. So 11 through 13, I lived in North Carolina, and I lived in Mount Airy.
No kidding.
Yeah, and every weekend on Saturday, my mother thought this was a jam session on WPAQ, Mount Airy AM, but it was really the merry-go-round, which was a show where they booked touring bluegrass bands. She didn't know. She thought it was a jam session. So every Saturday morning, she would drop me off there, and I was a kid thinking it was a jam session. and I'd sit around, and Clyde Johnson was the DJ at the time, and he would get me on the air to play with whatever band was there, and sometimes I'd play solo, and sometimes I'd play with the greats, the local greats, Dewey Murphy and L.W. Lambert.
Mm. Now, you're how old when you're doing this?
I was 11, 12, and 13 years old.
Mm. And you'd been playing a banjo how long by then?
I'd been playing banjo for about a year and a half when I started going there around 11 years old.
Okay. So other than picking up the banjo that your uncle brought from Ireland, who did you have instruction, or did you just start picking around on it and you wind up at this radio station at 11, 12 years old?
Well, my father showed me what he could, and then I had the Sonny Osborne Bluegrass Banjo book from the 60s or 70s that my father had, so I started on that. I went to a local guy in Billings, Montana, where I lived before I lived in North Carolina, and he showed me how to wear my picks and a few little things like this. And
It's key not to wear them backwards, you know. It's a key thing not to wear them backwards. It really slows down your progress unless you're wearing them correctly.
Yeah. and so I learned some of the basics, but mainly I learned from books and recording. I learned from the Earl Scruggs book, and my goal was to play along with the Will the Circle Be Unbroken versions of all the tunes that Earl played on.
Okay, so you got some books, you got a banjo, and you start going to a radio station, and all of a sudden it sounds like you're on the air.
Yeah, in North Carolina, I mean, there aren't any bad banjo players there.
Well, and there's been a lot of really, really good ones come out of there, too.
Yeah, and I was fortunate enough to meet people like L.W. Lambert, who grew up in the 20s, going to see Earl Scruggs play live.
Wow.
And he was in his 60s when he was taking me under his wing. And then I heard a guy named Rex McGee who changed my banjo playing forever. I had never heard anybody play Charlie Parker on the banjo.
Oh.
The only place I had ever heard Charlie Parker was on my dad's CD player. And I recognized this phrasing from when I was younger. I recognized it. I heard this guy playing Donna Lee on the banjo at a talent contest that I entered in Mount Airy, and it blew my mind. And then he played Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee at the same talent contest on the banjo, and I said, I have to do that. I gotta do that. That's what I want to do.
Okay, so that's a decision, but then how do you do that then? That's my question, because I got a banjo sitting right behind me on a stand here, and I have those questions all the time about, you know, I got to do that. I don't ever get there. So how do you get to what you're talking about from that kernel in your mind about this is what I got to do at Rex? And by the way, there's YouTubes of you and Rex that I've seen a couple as we're getting ready for today, and he's a very good, or should you know, he's a very good player. But how do you get from that? There's an idea. Let's go conquer that one.
Well, I didn't know that was my journey. And before I tracked down Rex to get a lesson from him when I was younger, my mom had called every banjo teacher in town and said, "Hey, my son wants to learn how to play." She didn't know, so she said, "Like Bela Fleck, he wants to learn this other stuff." And she had found the Tony Trischka Melodic Banjo book, and I'd learned out of that, and I'd learned Eric Weisberg's New Dimension and Bluegrass record.
Ooh.
I was working on all those tunes.
And that's, just for people listening, that's basically what was re-released as that soundtrack for Deliverance, right?
Yes.
And that's brilliant. Oh, man, that's brilliant stuff on that Eric Weisberg. Boy, he's absolutely, he really made a big mark with that album, and people always think of that album cover they released with the movie, but you can find that album under both covers, and that's good, man. Yeah. That's great stuff.
I had a tape of it, and I didn't stop until I had that record, the whole Bill Keith chapter on that Tony Trischka book. I just kept reading that from front to back, I mean, many, many times, so I started making up my own phrases and things like this. And I was like, I'm still not improvising with the kind of freedom that this guy Rex McGee was. I mean, this guy improvised with the freedom of The only other person I'd heard improvise like that was Charlie Parker.
You know, they think it and they do it. It's almost
It's
almost like an open channel to me.
Yeah, it's note by note instead of lick by lick.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be able to do that.
I love that phrase, note by note rather than lick by lick. That there's a lot in that, because banjo players, you learn licks and then you kind of fill around them and stuff, and you kind of know your safe spots to run back to if you happen to get lost. But what you're talking about is the notes are being thought about, and they're coming right out of the musician, in this case a banjo player's hands, and right onto the sound out to the people. And that is a rare, you're right, man, Coltrane, guys like that, they thought it and played it, but that's a neat, I like that, note by note rather than lick by, I'm going to write that down. Go ahead, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you keep saying things that are just blowing my mind.
Oh, okay, yeah, I mean, I asked my father, I said, how do I learn how to improvise like this? And he said, well, you know, you've got to learn how to read music. You know, my family's from, they're very common sense people from the Northeast. And he says, you know, every musician worth his salt reads music. You know, he was doing the tough love dad type thing. And of course, I was like, well, that's a lot of work. I don't want to do that. You know, and then I found Rex McGee. I went to him for a banjo lesson. He goes, well, it'll really help if you can learn to read music.
Darn it. Darn it. Somebody agrees with your dad.
Yeah, somebody agrees with my dad. So, of course, I had to learn to read music. And by the time I tackled that, I was 15 years old, and I was living near Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I'd already transcribed a bunch of Bela Fleck and the Fleck Notes stuff.
Well, everybody does that by 15. Skip on to something hard.
I liked the Drive album, but I kind of wanted to get away from bluegrass. And as I moved further, my family moved further away from North Carolina, I found it harder to find musicians to communicate with because I played the banjo and they didn't speak my language of bluegrass.
Yeah. All right.
So this music teacher comes into the music room where I went for lunch at this new school because I had no friends. And his name was Tom Marino. And Tom looked a lot like Al Pacino did in some of those 70s mafia movies. Yeah, he talked like this, and he had the skinned glasses. And, you know, Ryan, I don't know the language you speak on the banjo, but I'm sure that we can find a way for us to communicate. And so I brought in a book that I had bought called Improvising Jazz by Jerry Coker.
Yep.
And me and Tom ran through that book. I learned modal music theory. I learned how to construct chords. And, you know, all of this stuff, of course, you don't just learn it. This is a lifetime worth of information to work on. It's just the concept that he got across to me to wrap my head around.
Mm.
And he introduced me to the music of Herbie Hancock and Miles Davis.
What, from the 60s? And, from that era in the 60s, before the fusion stuff, maybe?
Yeah, some of that kind of blue, John Coltrane's Blue Train.
Mm-hmm. How about Maiden Voyage?
Maiden Voyage, oh yeah. Maiden Voyage, Dolphin Dance.
Oh yeah.
All the Herbie Hancock classics. And then he showed me how jazz changed through the decades. You know, bebop in the 40s and 50s, hard bop in the early 60s, and then everybody started to go electric in the late 60s. And, you know, Weather Report, Jaco Pastorius, and it was these big names, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Wayne Shorter, Cannonball Adderley, that became my heroes. And I wanted to achieve from early on, from Tom Marino's guidance, the integrity and the timelessness of this music that these people were improvising as groups of musicians together. I wanted that. I wanted to reach that because I wanted to be able to create music like that.
Well, I've heard a lot more of your stuff than I was able to play today, but if you haven't reached it, you're either looking in the window from the outside or you're knocking loudly on the door.
Yeah, I'm really, you know, it's a lifetime of work, and I look at every record like it's a photograph or a snapshot of that time. And, you know, as a banjo player, we're not always able to come up with the the funds that we need to record a particular record, but I have a lot of music that I want to experiment with, and that I have a fearlessness at this point. And like most musicians, every record that I have for sale at the present time, I feel isn't a representation of what I'm thinking now.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. You were, when we were talking just last week, kind of getting ready for up to speed on this, you've been in Europe, and you were playing with Bill Evans. Now, a lot of these people know Bill because he's called into the show, and they know Bill Evans as a banjo player out in California, you know, by way of the Virginia, I believe. But you're playing with a whole other Bill Evans, not the Bill Evans trio guy.
Right. There are three Bill Evans that just played with Miles Davis.
That's right. No, I knew that. Good one. Yeah, you're a pretty sharp guy.
Yeah, and the first one was the famous piano player on Kind of Blue,
mm-hmm.
famous for revolutionizing jazz piano voicings in the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
And the second one, I believe, was a horn player named Yusef, who changed his name from Bill Evans to Yusef Lachif.
That's right, yeah.
In the Muslim African-American movement in the 60s and 70s. And then my Bill Evans, who I play with, is a tenor saxophone player who was taking lessons from the famous Miles Davis horn player David Liebman in the late 70s, attending college near New York. And he was recommended to Miles Davis by Liebman. And Miles Davis pulled Bill out of college in the early 80s. And he said, you know, I know you're going to all these jam sessions in New York City. I want you to put me together a hot band for my Carnegie Hall comeback concert. It's going to be an electric band. It's going to be wild. It's got to be funky. And you're the man to put the band together. So he found Mike Stern, and he found Marcus Miller. And he found the drummer that played with them, and later John Scofield. And he later played for Mahavishnu Orchestra with John McLaughlin. There's the connection there.
Right.
So,
John McLaughlin, you and I chatted about this. I don't know that there's a better, and if people in the audience here, some of them will know, because this is a pretty sharp, the people that listen to this program are pretty sharp people. But John McLaughlin, to me, and you talk about the Mahavishnu Orchestra, that was fusion. He does straight ahead jazz. He did that whole Indian thing with the Shakti band, where before anybody else, he was over there with a band doing totally. Carlos Santana, I remember that album they did. He does Coltrane stuff, and he's still playing. And you know this guy, John McLaughlin, and play music with him.
Yeah. You know, when I decided to stray from bluegrass, and especially when I decided to jump into the jazz blues fusion explorations that I was doing, you know, I'm not like a middle-of-the-road guy. I'm kind of black and white, so I like my bluegrass real traditional, unless somebody asks something else for me, and I wanted to cross over 100%, so I understand this language.
Mm-hmm.
And John McLaughlin's music really spoke to me across the board, because he plays fast like a banjo player.
Mm-hmm.
All his notes are staccato. He's not using any of these electric guitar tricks like these hammer-ons or legato playing or sweep picking. He picks every note. He's a flat picker. And he just doesn't play bluegrass. He plays hard bop fusion. And he goes seamlessly from acoustic, you know, acoustic Indian music to a nylon strung guitar, flamenco. And then to blazing electric guitar.
I read an article, an interview with him, I think, for an acoustic guitar several years ago. I think that was the magazine. And he said he practices, not performing, but he practices, I'm going to say, 6-7 hours a day. Now, this is a guy, this is not recent. I mean, this is recent, not when he was starting out. With all the chops he had and everything he had behind him, he's still playing like 7-8 hours a day practicing. And the interviewer said, well, why are you doing that? And he said, because I'll know the difference.
Yeah, he'll know the difference. He's absolutely correct.
Yeah, and a lot of us in the audience wouldn't know it, but he would know something was wrong, so he plays. He wants to be perfect, and he wants to go where he wants to go. And I just thought that was a neat thing that he said, I'll know. Who's going to know? Nobody, but I'll know. And I'll be on stage playing, and I want to be the absolute top. But I think it was acoustic guitar, maybe 8 or 9 years ago. Great interview with him.
Yeah, I mean, he's right, you know. You're never going to get to a point if you're if you follow some of the philosophies of jazz, you know, make music your religion, make it your practice, and understand and be content with the fact that, you know, there's always something else to learn. You know, the only person you're competing against is yourself, you know. And, you know, it kind of makes it music into a video game for some of us. Like, I'm not content unless I practice this many hours a day to keep my chops up. Mm. You know, we want to cover a lot of ground in these improvisations. You know, there's places, because when you improvise like John McLaughlin does, and like the rest of us try to do, you're trying to reach a level of improvisation that's kind of, you want to play stuff, you want to pull stuff out of the hat that you didn't even expect you were going to do.
Yeah.
And that's the moment of clarity for improvisers. I think that's what we all search for.
Wow. So you mentioned, where are you right now? Are you in North Carolina now?
I'm in New York City. Okay. I live in Manhattan now.
Okay. I think you might still have an area code that comes in on my phone from a different. It seems to me like it comes in.
Oh, yeah. I kept my North Carolina number.
Okay. All right, good. So are you snowed in up there, or did you? What's going on?
Well, there's plenty of snow. it was sideways last night.
Yeah,
and it's nice to see it. I haven't seen snow in a long time, so. What, enjoying the weather.
So with all you've said about what your goals are and the practice and the thought that you're putting behind this, what do you got coming up? What's going on in Ryan Cavanaugh in the next in the near future?
Well, you know, I have a lot of ideas. There's stuff that I've been sitting on the burner for years, and it's all about coming up with the I'm not signed to a record label. I put out my stuff independently. And my job with Bill Evans pretty much funds my projects that I do, so I've been influenced by a lot of things, and lately it's some of those old banjo sounds. I'm really inspired by how old bluegrass was recorded, and I've been experimenting with the old reverb sounds and the old tube preamp sounds, and I would love it, but I'm using these sounds with the electric banjo. So I can play with bass and drums live and not feedback and things.
You know, Ryan, we did, and I'm speaking just in case you're tuning in. This is Steve Martin. I'm speaking to Ryan Cavanaugh, and we're just talking about what he's got going on. We did not mention, I think that Bill Evans, the one you play with, kind of plays this under the general name of soulgrass. At least that's most. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So just so you know, out there, listeners, there is grass in the world. We're not abandoning everything, and you can find some really cool YouTubes of Ryan playing with Bill Evans in all sorts of different venues, and sometimes you're playing electric, sometimes you play acoustic, but you're playing banjo, and then you got Bill Evans over there just wailing away and just great jazz stuff. It's just a neat marriage of sound.
Yeah, he definitely wants the bluegrass banjo roles in his music. He specified that he doesn't want a lot of the on top of the beat, really pushing the tempo banjo playing, unless the tune calls for it. He wants it to be laid back and really funky, but he wants it with chords that are familiar to him, altered chords, you know, with a lot of bluegrass players refer to as jazz chords.
Right, right. The ones we just don't know where they are, that's what we really call them. What was that? Those are jazz chords.
Right. And, you know, he definitely had a vision from the beginning of what he wanted. He experimented until a sound gelled. And, it's really remarkable how it's gelled. It's gone through many phases. It went through a phase where I made the banjo sound like a B3 organ for a while, and then a guitar. We've had many guests. We've gone on tour with, we've had Victor Wooten in the band. We've had Stan Bush in the band. Richard Bona, Dennis Chambers. You name it. It's been quite a ride. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, you know, if I think back to my Don Cornelius, I want to get this right. Soulgrass sounds like it's all been. I'm not going to do the voice, although I can. It's all been a soul gas. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Well, are you giving lessons now?
Yeah, I give lessons in New York for whoever calls. I'm not really advertising them, but you know, those that know about it, they can take lessons with me over Skype or arrange a lesson in New York City.
And I have to ask every banjo player, and there's been a bunch of them that have been on the show, as Steve Dilling we were ending up this morning. I always have to ask, what kind of instruments are you playing? I know you do a lot of stuff with electric, but what's your preferred banjo right now? If you're gonna be Ryan Cavanaugh playing somewhere.
Well, I have two really great banjos, and you know, one's acoustic and one's electric. I try to look at myself like, you know, I kind of have to weigh the options depending on who I'm playing with. If I'm playing drums and bass, I'm going to play my electric banjo. And it's a custom made by my dad, Larry Cavanaugh. He made a banjo out of beautiful mahogany and radius the fretboard and fretted it himself. And it chose the pickups that went in there. And I put key tuners on it, and it's absolutely amazing.
You mean Bill's regular tuners, or you mean the D tuners?
The D tuners. Yeah. I got four D tuners on an electric banjo, and I'm having a blast with it. My father has a custom electric bridge that we're going to sell for a limited time only, coming up here in the next couple months.
Oh,
and okay. It just changed the way the electric banjo sounds. Most of the time, they sound really rubber bandy,
like an electric guitar.
Yeah, they don't sound quite as good as an electric guitar with the wooden bridge on them, but my dad invented one that where it actually sounds like a banjo, unless you want it to sound otherwise, and it's really nice to be able to compete against, you know, the volume that Dennis Chambers might put out there when he's behind the drum kit on stage. It's really nice that I'm not feeding back, and I can still sound like a banjo. I don't have to use a lot of processing.
Well, and then I found that in my limited experience, if I'm playing, I'm getting drowned out with you guys have a drum and electric guitar. I play so hard on my acoustic, I had to get one, you know, at least put a pickup in one, because you overplay to try to be loud enough to a mic, which really distorts and kind of screws up what you're doing anyway. So you can play this comfortably and be heard, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, if that electric guitar player is blasting me out, I can just look over and smile and turn my amp up and be right there with it. And it doesn't affect my sound at all, and it sounds like a great banjo. In fact, it sounds so much like a banjo that now I can mess around with filters and preamps, and I even have the option, I can make it sound like a banjo coming through an old radio or a banjo coming through an old RCA mic.
Wow.
It doesn't just sound like an acoustic. I can simulate the mics on it with different tuned preamps and things.
Banjo to infinity and beyond.
Yeah. And my acoustic banjo, for what I do, it's the one that I played on My Favorite Thing. It's a Deering Kenbrook Legacy model. So it's their mahogany Kenbrook model. Deering put this in my hands a couple of years ago. Fantastic banjo.
Has it got the special Kruger tone ring, or the one that he actually plays?
Yeah, it's got the Kruger tone ring. It's an unplated tone ring made 500-year-old Bell foundry in Switzerland. And it, as you can hear from the My Favorite Things track, it rings like a
gorgeous
bell.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Yeah. And Jens could play. We could talk another 5 days about Jens Kruger. At least you could. I could listen.
Oh, yeah. Jens is wonderful. He's been a good friend throughout the years, and he planted the seed to the Deering people that I was out there, and they were generous enough to say, hey, you need this banjo, and they sent it to me, and it, you know, it changed me. I was playing a banjo that I won at a contest at Reno Fest years ago, and it was a newer Gibson, and it just, I made do with it, and I liked it, but I didn't know what I was missing until I played this Deering.
Mm. Well, I think that's isn't that what Tony Trischka plays now, too?
Yeah.
But maybe a different tone right now.
I think most of the major guys out there have one of these banjos.
Yeah. Wow. So are you appearing anywhere? I want to let you go. I appreciate you calling in, but are people can go see Ryan anytime soon, or are we just kind of working things up right now?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to say, I'm playing in Philadelphia at the Blockley on February 22nd with Bill Evans, Bill Gratch, featuring John Medeski on keyboards.
Yeah.
And the next night I'm playing in Boston at the Regatta Bar, February 23rd. with Bill Evans and John Medefsky as well. And after that, from February 26th through March 3rd, I'm playing at Manhattan's Blue Note with Bill Evans Soulgrass. So it's a residency. It's two shows a night. February 26th to March 3rd, also featuring John Medefsky and John Popper from Blues Traveler.
Oh, no. This is killing me. Well, you know, we've had these conversations, and every time you start talking about these people you're playing with, I'm thinking, oh, that's like the greatest harmonica player ever. You know, they remember that pop song that they kind of busted with Blues Traveler, but John can flat out play a harmonica.
Oh, yeah, and last year with Mike Maneri and Randy Brecker. So, yeah. I mean, Bill really, you know, he loves to play some good music.
Wow.
He hires top-shelf people no matter what it takes.
Great.
And I really love that. My education with Phil Evans has been really special. I'm spoiled.
And when you take the stand, you're being challenged from all these guys, and you're learning and coming out each session a little more towards your goal?
Oh, yeah. Some of these guys most of them have never played with a banjo player. You know, they give me a sideways look. Where'd you get the Martian on the banjo? And my goal is to play and speak their language. You know, Bill has always told me music is a language. You know, comparing jazz and bluegrass is like comparing Spanish and German.
Yeah, that's good.
There's some similar roots there, but, you know, they're spoken differently. So I want to speak these guest musicians' language and impress them. You know.
That's good. I like that. I like that quote. I still like the better one than his note by note rather than lick by lick. That's my favorite, but I like the language thing too, so I'm gonna keep that back there also. But the other one just absolutely spells it out from what you're trying to say.
Yeah, my mission statement has always been when I'm playing jazz fusion music is Miles Davis, the cynical Miles Davis was alive and around today. What could I play on the banjo to make him dig the banjo?
And what's your answer? Well, what's your answer to your mission statement? Because I got to hear this. You don't have an answer. You just posed the question.
I just posed the question.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Follow that philosophy.
All right. Well, I would love to see you have that opportunity because that'd be an interesting answer to that question. Hey, Ryan. Kavanaugh, thanks, man, for calling. Please don't be a stranger. Anytime you feel the need, if you want to call me anytime, you know, just give me a holler. You're always welcome. I'm so thrilled we had a chance to chat, it's just been a blast for me. I hope the listeners out there have enjoyed it. They know that I'm partial to banjos, and, you know, you're a banjo player at the top of the pack in my estimation, and I've enjoyed this thoroughly. I hope other people have, but, you know, as long as I have, who really cares, you know, what the heck.
Well, thank you so much. I just wanted to tell the listeners that I have a bluegrass CD and a jazz CD for sale on iTunes.
Okay.
The bluegrass one was done a few years ago, and so was the jazz CD, and I'm also working on several new ones. I feel like my new record is turning into the banjo version of Dark Side of the Moon. Seems 10 years from now, I'll be releasing this thing, but it will eventually.
Well, are you going to tie it in with The Wizard of Oz?
I'm going to tie it in with the Pigle Bouncy.
Okay. That's better. That's much better. This is good. All right. All right, man. Well, listen, thanks so much for taking the time, and I've enjoyed this thoroughly. I hope you've enjoyed, Ryan, so you'll come back sometime.
Thanks a bunch, Steve. I really appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care. Ryan Kavanaugh here on Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass. I hope you enjoyed that. What a great talent. You can find so much of his stuff on YouTube, and if you like that, my favorite things that we played right before he came on, he's all over. He plays bluegrass, he plays jazz. Obviously, you can tell he's just a really nice nice young man who's got a great sense of humor, and what a joy.